Welcome to the Quick 10 podcast, brought to you by QuickTrack, focusing on all things FedCon and cyber defense from different perspectives and different personalities, all in 10-ish minutes. Here's your host, Derek White.
All right. Thank you, Alex, for joining us today on episode 2 of the Quick 10 podcast. How you doing?
Good. Great. Thanks for having me.
Good, man. Good seeing you again. Hope all is well. We kick this podcast series off, it's exactly what it is. It's 10-ish minutes talking about a specific topic that we dive right into. And today we're going to get into the world of ITAR and CMMC, which is what your specialty is. And we have today's Alex Trafton from Ancura. So one of the best, I believe, on the LinkedIn side of the world. If you're a LinkedIn user, first thing you need to do when you're done with this podcast is go follow Alex. Alex has great digestible content that he puts out on a regular basis. I highly recommend that people go do that. But from your experience, we're going to get right into it. And you know, there's a large misconception that, quote, because we're compliant with A, we're therefore pretty good with B. I know you guys hear that a lot. We hear that a lot. Talk about ITAR regulations and the misconceptions that come with that when people also have requirements and regulations like CUI protection around the CMMC side, NIST 800-171, and where you see that from your guys' side, and you know, share what people should know about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that's a very common misconception. I think it comes down to a conceptual issue in companies that they view ITAR as a regulatory issue, and so it sits with the legal function. And they view CMMC and CUI as a cybersecurity function, which typically sits in the technology focus, like maybe with the IT or cybersecurity, and that they don't speak well to each other. But yeah, that's a common misconception. And, you know, for defense contractors, right, you know, certainly if they have defense contracts, you know, if they're producing, you know, manufacturing items that are controlled under the ITAR, and they're providing that to the U.S. Department of Defense, you know, that ITAR data will also be CUI. And so, you know, in that case, those are coterminous, right? But companies can make products, and a lot of larger companies do this, where they have both commercial and defense businesses. And the technology can originate, right, with or without defense funding, could be ITAR, and they could be selling it commercially. And then it could also be part of an acquisition contract for the DOD and be CUI. They could also have CUI that's controlled under the Commerce Department's Export Administration Regulations, this dual use that the government might be acquiring, which is a separate regulatory regime. So those aren't necessarily the same thing, and they don't have all of the same requirements. You know, and so I think that the ITAR data is definitionally ITAR, right? It is something that is controlled under the ITAR by its very nature, right? The existence of that thing as that thing is making it ITAR, whereas CUI is really driven by whether the Department of Defense has technical rights to the data that it paid for it under an acquisition contract, right, which is the DFARS language. And so that's really where you can start to kind of see those rows divide, right? If this is proprietary data we developed and the DOD doesn't have rights to it, we could even be providing it to the government, but if it doesn't have rights to it, right, it's not CUI, but it could well be ITAR. And the requirements are very, you know, similar in some ways. They're both data protection requirements, but the ITAR is really focused on, you know, its origination was a non-proliferation regulation, right? And it's evolved and they update it. But for the most part, it's focused on sovereignty of data and making sure that foreign persons don't access data without a license so that the U.S. government can control, right, who has access to items which are covered under the U.S. munitions list, that they're end-use military items, right? And that's a regulatory thing, right, whereas CUI is contract-driven. And so there's a divergence of requirements, right, and they relate to a number of factors. You know, you can have CUI programs, you know, there's no sovereignty requirement or no foreign person access restrictions on CUI. Now, the Department of Defense can mark it as, you know, foreign persons access, and they can mark it as what functionally makes it export controlled, but its very nature is an export controlled, right? And there's many of the defense acquisition programs that have global supply chains, CUI data flows globally. It might be ITAR data, then those companies have to manage ITAR requirements, right? Mm-hmm. But they're not, the CUI doesn't make it so. And I think one of the big items where there's divergence and it's worth understanding is you know, protection of the data with encryption, right? So when you look at CUI requirements in NIST 800-171, and this is a requirement for any kind of federal agency encryption standard, is that there's a requirement to use FIPS validated encryption, right? Where the language in the ITAR is FIPS compliant encryption, right? And that's the difference between the CAVP, the cryptographic algorithm validation program, and the CMVP at NIST, which is the cryptographic module validation program, right? Mm-hmm. And I tend to think that there was a mistake when they wrote the ITAR regulation and they meant validated, but they used compliant. But you know, that's here or there. So that's a remarkably different standard, right? Whether or not you have to maintain FIPS validated modules versus algorithms, right? Which is a much lower standard, right? Because most strong algorithms are going to be approved for use in cryptographic module validation programs, right?
Sure. Yep.
FIPS modules. So those are differing requirements. One is far more onerous, right? So the other thing is the degree to which encryption is a protection under the regulation or under the contract. You know, I hear in the CMC world a lot, people saying, well, if I just encrypt with FIPS validated modules, my data is fine. I can send it out. That's not true under the ITAR, right? So in the ITAR, there's a section of the 22 CFR, the one part 126.1, which is a restriction on export of even encrypted data to certain countries. And so those countries include Russia, they include North Korea, China, and a few others that are, you know, exist on the sanctions list, right? Mm-hmm. That data, even if it's encrypted with FIPS validated or compliant encryption, data can't go there, right? So the notion that I think a lot of like CMMC thought leaders have taken is that if I just use encryption, right, to the standard FIPS validated standard, that I can just send ITAR where I want. Or sorry, I can send CUI where I want. Well, if that data is also CUI, you have to have some controls over where it goes globally. And that's a big one. And I think the other thing is most companies are struggling with, cloud services and sovereign cloud services, right? Using GCC versus GCC High in Microsoft. You have to pay close attention to who's accessing that data under service contracts, right? So dumping your data into a FedRAMP authorized cloud environment, it's not necessarily sufficient, right? It's sufficient under the CUI rules, but you have to ensure that that company, if that data is also ITAR data, which a lot of defense data, especially in aerospace and defense manufacturing, right? Yep. Where there's typically most of it's going to be ITAR, that the cloud service providers ensuring not only that your FedRAMP authorized controls are implemented, but also that, you know, anyone who may access it, right, or the sovereignty of that data itself is resides within the U.S. and is only accessed by U.S. persons, right? So those are things that you want to consider, right? And again, like, you know, companies tend to kind of view those things in silos, and I really encourage them to, if you have in-house counsel or an external counsel who specializes in international trade controls, that you engage them when you're going through these CUI processes, right? You know, your self-assessments, DIPCAC assessments, CMMC assessments, right? Policy design, mm-hmm. And how you scope your policies, right? Because a lot of companies will say, well, I'm going to apply your policies enterprise scale, or I'm going to apply them at an enclave, a CUI enclave scale. You know, your policies need to account for all of your regulatory requirements. So that could extend beyond ITAR as well. It could extend into privacy. You could have EAR data, dual use commerce control data. And so those policies need to be appropriately scoped and include the appropriate requirements, right? And a lot of that's on how you screen individuals, right? How you screen your visitors. One issue we've run into is that companies will build, you know, their visitor management system around the ITAR requirements, which is like, hey, if they're a U.S. person, I don't need to escort them. They can access the facility. But under CUI requirements, they need to be escorted at all times, right? So an ITAR program, like typically companies will be, you know, ITAR has been around since the 80s, right? Mm-hmm. And they'll have built an entire compliance program around the ITAR because it's been there for a long time. And then when they get the CUI contract requirements, you know, after all the DFARS saga was complete, you know, then they're saying, well, we already have a visitor management program that addresses ITAR, so we're fine. Well, no, there are those nuanced differences between ITAR and CUI, which is really in the ITAR. Once you're a U.S. person, they're like, State Department's kind of hands off about that, whereas the CUI requirements are not so. So that's really some of the things to think about when you're dealing with data that's covered under both requirements, right? One, the DoD contract requirement, and the other is the ITAR regulation, right? Establishing controls around end use if you're an exporter of that technology. I think it's a little more nuanced than we'd want to discuss today, but those are some of the big ones that I see, commonly with respect to defense contractors.
Yeah, and that's well said, and I think with that misconception side too, you nailed it. When you get into defense manufacturing, aerospace, the companies that have really put their emphasis either internally or with external resources on ITAR and export control data, like they tend to do better for sure on when it comes to data protections and controlled information, because they understand origin of data, where it's flowing, who's got access to it, who do I need to be authorizing and paying attention to, how we authorize, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So, the unfortunate side, obviously, for most of the defense industrial base, when CUI and ITAR and different regulations are coming around, is they do tend to have a lack of internal resources. And if they do have it, it's a smaller team. So, obviously highly recommended that external resources like yourself that are experts and stuff is to engage with that. And that kind of rolls into kind of my other question I wanted to ask you, as we can kind of wrap up with this, is if someone wanted to learn one thing from you, like today, like short term, maybe it's been off the radar, maybe it's been something that just hasn't been, because of lack of resources, something that they've been able to grasp. If they hear one thing from you today on what they can do right now in the short term to help them get down a path where this is going to end well for them, what would that be, from Alex's standpoint?
Yeah, I think know where your data is, right? I mean, that sounds almost cliche. And you can leverage these programs to work together, right, to do that, right? So if you look at the guidance from the DoD, that's the 5230-.24, which is the distribution statement markings, that's a document that's been revised year in, year out for since ITAR, and DoD contracts were around. And so if you go back to the first document from 1984, if you look at the first type of sensitive data that the DoD is talking about, it is really, they're talking about export control data, right? They're saying, we're really worried about ITAR data. A lot of that data is going to be similar. It's going to be technical documents, right? So understanding that, what they mean. If you look at controlled technical information, that type of CUI that constitutes covered defense information in DFAR 7012, right? That's application of military and space technology. That's the ITAR definition, right? Mm-hmm. So what I would say is one way to kind of to not have this be, a problematic issue is you can start to look at, if you have a robust ITAR program, and typically companies will have one because they've been doing it for a long time, you have a training program and you have an identification and marking program. If you can start using that and associating those, like if you have ITAR category 11, you're satellites and things like that, and you know that you have space contracts with Space Force DoD, right, identifying your ITAR and then finding out which programs are associated with it, right? Like, so is that a government, a defense program, right? You can start to leverage your ITAR program, which a lot of companies have, to your point, in better form than they do their CUI programs. And so they can start to use that to help identify where their CUI is, right? And getting it marked and controlled. And then looking at those policies and saying, okay, well, do we have enough, governance in place to kind of effectively control this data to both standards? And typically you're going to end up taking the higher watermark standard, right, which is FIPS validated encryption, your CUI standards, but never neglecting some of those nuanced ITAR requirements. So I would encourage, trade controls, international trade controls experts to get in and read DFAR 7012, to get in and read the special publication 800-171. And I would equally encourage cybersecurity experts who are focused on CUI and CMMC to go and read the ITAR and watch some webinars and read some articles on that and really start to understand, how you can be a resource to your broader governance of enterprise data and find ways to commonly solve these problems. Because while they're different, they're the same in a lot of ways, which is really that control of technical data.
Yeah, that's no, that then that's great. Obviously, we could sit here and talk about this for a week if we wanted to, and hopefully people would listen. You're a great resource for this topic. This is not one of those topics you want to be wrong on. You know, you can put a lot of focus on half of the conversation today on, let's say, CY, CMMC, NIST 171, and whiff on the ITAR stuff down the road without even realizing it. So very, very important topic. Thank you, Alex, who is the Senior Managing Director at Encura. I didn't even mention that at the beginning. So thanks for joining. Where can people find more information from you if they want to reach out and look at using you as a reference here?
Yeah, I think you said already, my LinkedIn is probably the place where that gets consolidated from all the different avenues. You know, I'll publish our practice thought leadership there. I post there frequently on matters of national security, specifically ITAR and CUI, and also artificial intelligence and trade controls. So if those areas are interest to your listeners, I think come to my LinkedIn. You can always message me there. I respond quickly. So I think that's probably the best place to find me.
Perfect. Well, perfect. Well, thank you, sir. Appreciate it. I'm looking forward to next time we have you on, because we'll probably want to tackle some of the stuff you just said in a little bit more detail. And so thank you so much. And if anybody has any other questions or topics you want to submit, please subscribe to the podcast. Check out quicktrack.com for any information from the QuickTrack side, and happy to connect you to whatever resources we can. But again, thank you, Alex, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode, and make sure to subscribe to the Quick 10 podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and check us out on YouTube as well. For more information about QuickTrack, visit our website at www.quicktrack.com. That's CUICKTRAC.com.